Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Dante by Cameron Hart. Narrated by Soren Gray and Helena Walters. Chapter 1. Dante. Romeo leans back in his dark brown leather chair, folding his arms over his chest as he looks around the room at his most trusted men. As the second in command of the DeSalvo crime family, I sit on Romeo's right side during these meetings as a symbol of respect and power. Next to me is Armando, the meat-headed enforcer, and across from me is Valentino, one of our top capos. After the incident last month, we've beefed up security, Romeo states. Heads nod around the room, everyone remembering when Romeo's woman Talia was lured away and taken by our rivals, the Colombo family. The Don goes on to detail the changes around the compound, as well as safety precautions for when Talia goes outside. I try to pay attention, but my goddamn phone has been vibrating in my pocket for the last 20 minutes. I know who it is without looking. Cambria, my father's nurse. I also know what the text says without even reading it. She wants me to go to Chicago and visit my old man. Not a fucking chance, sunshine. I pay for the very best in-home healthcare, the most up-to-date medical technologies, and the top doctors in the area for my father. Isn't that enough? It's not like I'm taking care of him out of love or gratitude for the cold bastard. He chose to deal with life's blows by falling into a bottle of whiskey and not surfacing until he was diagnosed with kidney disease. No, I don't do it for that bitter, ugly old man. I do it for my mother. May she rest in eternal peace. A familiar dull ache forms in my chest, and I rub my hand over my heart to break up the tension. I'm a few years shy of 40, and my mother has been gone for most of them. Still, her death is the one weak spot in my otherwise impenetrable walls. The less I interact with my father, the less I have to think about such sad, troubling things. My phone buzzes again, and Armando shoots me a glare. I don't acknowledge him, which is a general rule of thumb when dealing with the brute. He would rather storm onto a scene and crack skulls without a second thought. On the other hand, I prefer to lay out all of our options, study the eventual end of each of them, and then choose the wisest path accordingly. Needless to say, we don't see eye to eye on much, but Romeo has reminded me over and over not to question who he brings into the inner circle. At the end of the day, I trust Romeo more than I dislike Armando, so it is what it is. Sliding my phone out of my pocket, I unlock it and stare at the thread of texts from Cambria. Cambria.
Morning, Mr. Santa Rosa. Just checking to see if you have any time this week to come see your father.
Cambria.
I know you're a busy man, but surely you can spare a few days for family.
Cambria.
I think you'll be impressed with the progress we've made despite the setbacks this year.
I don't ask what the setbacks were. I don't care. I pay Cambria and the company she works for a handsome sum to deal with the ups and downs of caring for a cranky old man. Besides, he hasn't kicked the bucket yet. He'll probably outlive us all, fueled only by bitterness and hate.
Cambria. Yoga has helped with some of the muscle and joint stiffness, and believe it or not, I got your father hooked on meditating in the mornings.
My eyes rolled to the back of my head at the mention of yoga and meditation. If Cambria weren't the best nurse we've had to date, I'd tell her exactly what I think about all that New Age bullshit. As it is, she's lasted 3 times as long as any of the previous nurses. Between my father's grumpy ass and my supposedly unrealistic standards, the two of us have managed to run off everyone who has applied for the job within a few months, sometimes a few weeks. One lady quit on her first day. But Cambria has been with my old man for over a year, so that counts for something. It certainly says a lot about her constitution. From personal experience, I know it's hard to please my dad, and according to the dozen or so nurses who came before, I'm just as impossible to deal with. Personally, I think the younger generation isn't used to hard work. They want to be coddled, but that's not how the real world works. I don't have time to hold the hand of every caregiver who dares to take up the challenge that is Raul Santa Rosa, so having Cambria be so competent was a much-needed breath of fresh air. Until she started in on this whole coming for a visit thing. That shit is getting old real quick. I stare at the screen, watching those 3 little dots bounce up and down, indicating she's working on another text. She's persistent,
I'll give her that much. Cambria, maybe you could try meditating when you're here. It's a total game changer. For some reason, this is what triggers me to respond. My fingers start typing before my brain has a chance to catch up. Dante, I have never and will never meditate. Cambria, Raoul said the exact same thing. I growl at her response, then shove my phone in my pocket again. Romeo turns his attention toward me, giving me a hard glare. I straighten up and nod once, letting him know I'm here and I'm all in. No more distractions. My phone buzzes again, but I remain resolute, focusing on Romeo's update about the Columbos and our deal with the meatpacking plant union. Everything got fucked up last month when the Columbos tried moving in on our territory and taking over our money laundering operation via the union pension funds. Shit hit the fan, and our contact was shot in the head, along with his goon, who just so happened to be Talia's brother. A new head of the UFCW union has been appointed, Brent Carmichael. Valentino is working with him to strike up a similar deal to the one we had with his predecessor. It's all good and necessary information, but my mind keeps wandering back to Cambria and her insistence on me seeing my father. She's been working for me for nearly a year and a half, but only in the last 2 months has she started on the father-son reunion kick. Why now? Does my old man want to see me? I'm guessing not, since he's not the one texting me. How awkward would it be to show up and have my father kick me out? Once was enough for me, thank you. Dante, Romeo says, bringing me back to the present moment. I blink a few times, suddenly aware that everyone else has exited the room. Yes, boss, I answer, standing to meet him face to face. Where were you today? I got up at 6, my normal time, and made a breakfast of eggs and toast. Then I did some work for my home office before heading the gym. I had that lunch meeting in Manhattan, then... Not literally, Romeo grunts, cutting me off. I furrow my brow, wondering what else he could mean. He asked where I was, and I listed the places I'd been. What I mean, Romeo continues, is that your head was somewhere else during our meeting. What has you so distracted? It's not like you, Dante. Sighing, my shoulders drop slightly as I think of what to tell the boss. My phone buzzes again, and Romeo gives me a pointed look. Go ahead, he says with a nod. Answer it, then tell me who it is and why they have more of your attention than I do. Swallowing thickly, I pull out my phone and glance at the two texts she sent. Then I take time to really look at them, each word sinking into my stomach like a lead weight. Cambria. Your father would kill me for telling you this, but he's had several strokes in the last few months. He likes to think he's invincible, and part of me wonders if you think that too. Cambria. I don't know anything about your relationship, only that it's obviously complicated. I just feel like you need to know the stakes. Raoul's health has taken a turn, and I know you don't want to deal with that, but here we are. Please, please consider visiting your father before it's too late. Well, Romeo asks, taking a deep breath. I decide to get it all out there and ask for his advice. I consider Romeo my closest friend, though I'd never tell him that. Neither of us talks about it, but we both know. That's enough for me. My father has been ill for quite some time, I start. Romeo nods, encouraging me to continue. He's back in Chicago, being taken care of the best, but I guess things have escalated recently. The nurse thinks I should come for a visit.
Ah, the nurse who does yoga and meditation.
I roll my eyes. Yes. My friend gets a knowing look in his eyes, though I have no idea about what. It's gone before I can decipher it. You should go. My eyebrows shoot up my forehead, and I blink a few times, wondering if Romeo is kidding. The Don never jokes, though. So he must be serious?
I can't. I stutter. What about everything I need to do here? Things with the UFCW union are heating up, not to mention the retribution we're sure to get from the Columbos. I can't leave now.
Romeo studies me carefully for a few moments, then clears his throat.
Dante, I'm temporarily relieving you of your duties to the DeSalvo family. What? No, I...
Romeo holds his hand out, palm up, cutting me off.
Temporarily, he emphasizes. Just long enough for you to fly to Chicago, see your father, and come back.
What about the...
Columbos won't strike back so soon. They need time to regroup, recover, and replan.
In the meantime, I have my capos working on gathering intel. And the Union will be overseen by myself and Valentino.
We will keep you in the loop, of course, but you need not be here.
I press my lips together, trying to think of another excuse. But Romeo has me dead to rights. Anything I come up with, he'll counter. Nodding in defeat, I reluctantly and morosely agree to take the week off to see my father. Romeo dismisses me, and I step out of his office, pausing to lean against the wall outside.
Fuck,
I mutter under my breath. This is the last thing I want to deal with right now, or ever, for that matter. Reaching into my pocket, I pull out my phone and start typing a text to the persistent and ever-bubbly Cambria. I'm in the middle of delivering the happy news of my arrival when I receive an incoming call from the woman herself. I stare at the screen in shock, not sure what to do. She's never called before, only texted or emailed. That's my preferred method of communication, and she knows that. However, what little I know about Cambria tells me that she won't stop at one phone call, so I answer it, bracing myself for what's next.
Mr. Santa Rosa?
Comes the sweetest voice I've ever heard. I pull the phone away from my ear and double-check that it's the nurse calling. Indeed, it is Cambria Clayton.
I know you don't like phone calls, but I felt this was important and wanted to speak with you so the meaning doesn't get lost over text.
I blink a few times, trying to figure out why the hell I'm lightheaded and tense at the sound of her voice. It does something to me. Something wholly unfamiliar and unsettling.
I can hear you breathing, you know, Cambria says. If you don't want to talk, that's fine.
I have a feeling I have enough words for both of us. I snort at that, but cover it up with a cough. This woman shouldn't have the ability to make me laugh. Preposterous.
I know, she continues. I'm chatty and enthusiastic about pretty much everything, which isn't everyone's cup of tea. But that's not the point.
I grunted the idea of someone not liking Cambria, and then berate myself for giving a fuck. I don't. I can't.
The point is, your father might not ever say this, but he misses you, in his own way.
This pulls a dark laugh from the pit of my black soul.
The only thing that man misses is having a handle of whiskey permanently attached to his right hand.
He speaks, Cambria exclaims. I'd yell at her for disrespecting me, but she's so genuine in her excitement that I don't have it in me to bring her down a peg, which isn't like me, not at all.
You'll be pleased to know I will be in Chicago this week.
I'll catch the first flight out in the morning.
You are correct, Cambria answers,
her voice in a lower pitch, presumably in an attempt to match mine.
I am very pleased.
What other ways could I pleasure you? Jesus fuck. Where did that come from? Not only is it inappropriate, but I can't remember the last time someone elicited that kind of response from me. I can honestly say I've never reacted to anyone like this, let alone someone I haven't even officially met.
Good,
I managed to choke out. I'll be there mid-morning tomorrow.
Thank you, Mr. Santa Rosa. You won't regret.
I hang up. Before she can finish that sentence, her melodic voice and boisterous laughter are messing with my head. Besides, she's wrong. I'm sure I'll have nothing but regret after visiting my father, but I view this as another mission from Romeo. He told me to deal with my dad and return ready to fight. That's precisely what I'm going to do. Nothing more.
Chapter 2. Cambria. All right, Mr. S. It's about time to get ready for bed, I tell my client, Raul Santa Rosa. He narrows his eyes at me. One more game. His voice is gravelly, worn by decades of drinking and smoking from what I've gathered. That's what you said last time, I point out, raising an eyebrow at the old man. He tries his hardest to scowl. But a smile is buried deep down there somewhere. He even lets me see it sometimes. But fine, one more. Then you get ready for bed while I get your meds. A spark of triumph lights up Raoul's brown eyes, making him look like a mischievous little kid as he gathers the Connect Four pieces and separates them into colors. How can anyone not find him adorable? When I first took the job, Raoul was a little rough around the edges. We had some hard days where he was a stubborn jerk, but I showed him I'm equally as stubborn when it comes to taking care of people. It's my job as an in-home nurse and caregiver, and truly an act of love for each of my clients. I know all too well what it's like having gruff, jaded healthcare workers mishandling the most important person in my life. I want to make sure I treat everyone with the kindness and grace I wish had been afforded to my mother. Ready? I ask, pushing away the painful memories of those last few months of her life. Born ready, Raoul replies, his eyes focused on the slotted game board positioned between us. I smile at his seriousness over a simple children's game. The second week I worked for the Santa Rosas, I picked up a few board and card games from a local thrift shop and brought them over. I wasn't sure if Raoul would go for it, and for a while, he didn't. The games sat in the corner of the living room, unopened. Then, one morning, I arrived early and set up the Connect Four game on the kitchen table, along with a deck of Uno cards. Raoul wanted nothing to do with the cards, but he quickly became fascinated with the strategy behind Connect Four. We played a few rounds that morning, and he tried to act disinterested. However, when I moved to put it away, he stopped me and asked for one more game. Now, we play Connect Four almost every evening before bed. I drop one of my red chips into a slot on the board and watch in amusement as Raoul furrows his brow. He glances at his black chips, then back to the rows and columns on the board. Everyone in the in-home nursing agency I work for warned me away from taking the Santa Rosa job, saying the old man's bad attitude was only rivaled by his son's. After one conversation with Raoul, I knew he was a softie at heart. He has a prickly exterior to scare people off, and a lot of shame about his past that keeps him isolated. He just needed someone to be kind and patient and give him the benefit of the doubt. Raoul also needed someone to stand up to him and let him know when he was being an asshole. So far, I've managed the perfect balance of each. I wish those tactics worked on his son. Dropping another red chip onto the board, I laugh when Raoul curses under his breath. I may have cracked the code on Mr. Santa Rosa, but Dante is a different story. He's gruff like his father, but more detached, very professional, yet cold and stiff, stuck up. A smirk spreads across my face as I remember his response to trying meditation. I have never and will never meditate. Speaking of Dante, it's probably time I tell Raoul about his visit. Truthfully, I wasn't expecting Dante to give in. I've been needling him about coming to Chicago for weeks, if not months. Now that he's booking a flight and headed this way, I need to figure out how to break the news to Raoul. I put my last red chip into one of the remaining slots and watch Raoul grin from ear to ear as he plays his last chip, getting a Connect Four. This is as good a time as any, since this is the only time he allows himself to feel happiness. I've got some good news, I start, plastering on an enthusiastic smile.
Is it that I won for the fifth time in a row?
He gloats. I roll my eyes and start to put the game away. It's about your son. Raoul drops the chips he's holding and blinks a few times before looking up at me. I'm on a roll now, so I keep going. He's coming for a visit. Isn't that great? Dark brown eyes fix on mine, and while he's trying to be angry, I see his true emotion. Fear.
Why?
To see you, of course, I answer lightly. Raoul snorts.
When?
Tomorrow.
What the fuck? When were you going to tell me?
Right now, I say firmly, letting him know I won't tolerate his raised voice. It's a bit last minute, but...
A bit? Give an old man time to prepare,
he grumbles. And what do you have to prepare? Last time I checked, I do the prep work around here.
Cambria.
Mr. S. He sighs heavily, resting his head in his hands.
It's complicated between my son and me,
he says softly. I pick up the game and put it away before sitting next to Raoul. I know, I tell him just as softly. I'm not sure what happened between you two, but don't you think it's time to reconnect?
I'm not the only one who hasn't picked up the phone in 25 years,
he grouses. True, but you're the parent. Whether you or your son admit it, you hold a place of power in his life, for better or worse. Don't you want it to be for the better? Lead by example and all that?
You don't have a kid. You'll know what it's like when you fucked up as badly and often as I have.
That's not fair, and you know it. It's not fair to keep punishing yourself, and it's certainly not fair to your son to let your pride get in the way of having a relationship. I know I'm being harsh, but I want this reunion to go well. Raoul is a tough old man who has weathered a lot in his life, but his health has been fragile for quite some time. The numerous strokes this year took longer and longer to recover from, and this last one cost him quite a bit of mobility. It breaks my heart to think about Raoul and Dante not seeing each other at least one last time. That kind of guilt eats away at your soul, and I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy, even the cold-hearted, aloof Dante. I have one last card to play, though I feel bad about bringing it up. Still, I'm doing this for the right reason. I know it's hard to talk about, but wouldn't Diane want you and your son to have a relationship? Bringing up his deceased wife was a low blow, but I know I have him when he dips his head. You have to try. I'm not saying it will be easy, but nothing worthwhile is. He nods once, then claps his hands on his knees.
I guess I don't have much of a choice, eh?
That's the spirit, I joke, standing and helping him with his walker. Now go get ready for bed. I'll be in with meds in a few minutes. Raoul waves me off before shuffling down the hall. I let out a breath and deflate against the kitchen counter. The first two hurdles are now over. First, convincing Dante to visit, and second, getting Raoul to agree. While he didn't exactly jump for joy, I'll take his defeated acceptance. It's a start. 20 minutes later, I'm locking up the back door to the main house and heading to my studio apartment / cottage across the yard. The other nurses complained about that as well. They didn't like the live-in situation that Dante required and didn't understand why they couldn't go home at night. Walking in the front door, I look around at the little home I've created. The nurses who managed to work for the Santa Rosas for a short time told me the cottage was a depressing hole in the wall, and truthfully, it was in pretty bad shape when I moved in. This place looks much more inviting with a good scrub down, some new lights, a few thrift store paintings, and a gorgeous macrame hanging I found in a dumpster. I even hung a beaded curtain to separate the living area from my sleeping area. I don't mind the simple living conditions. I'm only here in the evenings and don't need much. After my mother passed, I spent the life insurance money on the funeral and medical bills. When that ran out, I sold our home and nearly everything in it to cover the rest. I started over with nothing and no one, but I got into a good nursing school. Unfortunately, I had to take out a ton of student loans to make ends meet, even working full-time on top of classes. That's a huge reason I took this job. If I stick with it for 3 years, my debt will be paid off, and I can start looking for a place of my own. It's a nice thought. After kicking off my shoes, I beeline to the bathroom and turn the shower on to its hottest setting. Stripping down, I step under the steam and let the warm water ease my tight muscles. I'd be lying if I said I wasn't anxious about Dante's visit. He's the mysterious benefactor who lives in New York City and has never, not once, been back to see his father. The two haven't spoken in decades, from what little information I could get from the other nurses and Raul himself. I'm not sure what to expect. Dante is less than thrilled to be pulled away from his busy, successful life, and I get the sense he finds me annoying. It wouldn't be the first time. But with Dante, it feels different. His opinion of me matters, and I don't want to think about why. Turning the water off, I dry myself with a towel and pull on my sleep shorts and a comfy tank top. I comb through my wet hair and braid it on the side before climbing into bed. Taking a deep breath, I try to calm my nerves and get comfortable. It's going to be a long day of playing peacemaker tomorrow, so I better rest up.
Chapter 3. Dante. I tip the cab driver and gather my shit from the trunk, sighing as I shoulder my bag. Looking at my watch, I groan when I see it's past 1 a.m. I told Cambria I'd be here tomorrow mid-morning, but an earlier flight opened up. I figured the sooner I got here, the sooner I could leave. It seemed like solid logic at the time, but now it's pitch black out and I don't want to sneak into my old man's house like a thief. Then again, he probably wouldn't expect anything less from me. Waving the cabbie off, I trudge up the 2 porch stairs and take a deep breath before opening the door. Only it's locked. Which makes sense. It's the middle of the goddamn night. Well, this was a stupid idea. What was I thinking? It's not like me to miss an important detail like not announcing my arrival and being locked out. This whole situation has thrown me off my game, and I don't like it. Not one bit. Looking around at the property I bought for my father decades ago, I remember there being a little cottage around back. I'm not sure the last time anyone stayed there, but I've slept in worse places. Besides, it's only for the night. With any luck, I'll upset my father over breakfast and be on my way back to New York before lunch. I trudge around the side of the house and into the backyard, frowning when I step in mud. A fucking course, I mutter as I lift my shoe out of the muck. Rationally, I know mud exists in New York City as well, but right now, this is all Chicago's fault. I eventually find the little structure tucked away in the corner. Finally, I've earned a few hours of shut-eye, however rough they might be. Gripping the doorknob, I rattle it a few times and shove on the door, stumbling a bit when it gives way. Damn door hardly fits in its frame. I slam it behind me and turn around, only to be assaulted with some sort of net made of beads. What the fuck? I grunt at the same time as a shriek fills the room. Stay back, someone shouts. I'm armed. I'd recognize that voice anywhere. As much as I hate to admit it, I heard her voice in my fitful sleep on the plane. I heard it in the cab ride over here. Am I hallucinating it right now? Cambria? I ask as I fight my way out of what appears to be a beaded curtain, not a net. No, I'm Tambria, she says, in the most unconvincing voice ever. You're a shit liar, and you're trespassing. I manage to untangle myself from the tacky decor, and then I'm face to face with a curvy little ray of sunshine, complete with white blonde hair that sparkles even in the darkness. Bright blue eyes blink at me, wide and tinged with fear. I'll give her some credit. She may be terrified, but she's standing on her bed, shoulders back, head high, chin out, ready to tackle
the monster who woke her. She's clutching something in her right hand.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?